She's the media maven with her finger on the pulse of the heartbeat of Chicago. If it's happening in the Windy City, she's got you covered. Now here's the lady that puts the fun in fundraising, Candid Candace Jordan.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another fabulous edition of the podcast. I am so excited to be here again with John St. Augustine, and I am telling you, it has been a very action-packed week, and I can't wait to share all the details.
Action-packed?
Action-packed. I mean, I'm telling you, it's been a mile a minute. We have got so much to talk about.
Fantastic.
Today, this show has got a super special guest who I'm sure he doesn't remember, but I met him years ago, and he's going to be coming to Chicago to MC a fabulous brand new fundraiser to benefit WINGS program, which is the largest agency in the country to support survivors of domestic violence. So listen to what he does. He's a fashion photographer, TV host, author, best known, I think, for his role as a judge and photographer on America's Next Top Model. I mean, he's been involved in fashion and the beauty industry and fashion industry for a long, long time. He's 6'4". He couldn't be cuter. I mean, he's almost as cute as you are, John.
Oh, Jesus.
But Nigel, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, you know, you're coming to Chicago, and you've done events at the 21C Museum and Hotel before, isn't that right?
That's right. Actually, it's a great location. I worked there actually for several years as a creative director, helping them with their events and their art. And, you know, I'm a big supporter of the arts, and I love the fact that 21C Hotel specifically is this extraordinary exhibition space as well as a hotel, so that, you know, when you are staying in the Windy City, you get the chance to check out some art. Even if you don't have it on your agenda, you can get a bit of both. So that's why it was always a favorite place of mine.
Oh, I agree. It's one of the chicest spots in the city. I mean, it's all the hipsters hang out there, so I'm not surprised you're involved with that, Nigel. And so I want to tell you, you know, you won't remember this, but I met you years ago at Pamela Rowland's yacht party following one of her shows. And I know you're a very good friend of hers. I always see you in the front row. How long have you been involved with fashion, and where and when did that all start?
Well, first of all, I do remember meeting you.
Oh,
and
no.
Of course I do. How can I forget? And that night as well was quite the night. I mean, what a beautiful... First of all, she's only had one fashion show where she brought the yacht in.
Really?
And had it parked in the, you know, on the Hudson River. So
yes,
that was a pretty spectacular thing. So I remember that night very well. But yeah, you know, I've been working in fashion for, you know, the better part of 30 years now. So, mm-hmm. You know, I've seen a lot of changes. I've seen a lot of things come and go. And, you know, the fashion industry is fascinating. It's something that's always in flux. And, you know, it's in many ways a reflection and a reaction to what's happening in pop culture. And, you know, and I think that's always something that's, you know, very, very interesting. You know, you know, when you look at through the eras of fashion, you know, you see where, it, you know, in the 80s when it was, you know, there was a lot of excess, and, mm-hmm. and fashion was very over the top with big hair and loud makeup and bright colors. And, you know, then you look at the 90s and you sort of see heroin chic and grunge and androgyny and how things changed. And it's very much a reaction and a reflection and an art form in many ways.
Yeah, and you've kept up with it so beautifully. I mean, your photos are timeless. And I know that one of the books that you've written, which I think is so interesting, it's called Models of Influence, 50 Women Who Reset the Course of Fashion. And to the point that you just made, you know, things were so excessive in the 80s. I mean, what made the models you chose so, the ones who you picked for this book, what made them so special?
Well, I think specifically what I wanted to do was sort of redefine what it means to be a supermodel. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's a term that's bandied around pretty loosely these days. And, you know, in my opinion, you know, the true supermodels are the models that influenced the world at large and the industry itself. And there are so many women who have done just that. But, you know, the book is specifically highlighting the models from the industry who really changed the landscape of how we see beauty, how we perceive the business itself, and really changed, you know, the world's perspective on what's acceptable beauty.
Yeah, and I haven't read the book, so I'm not sure who's in it. But I'm assuming Naomi Campbell and Linda Evangelista, and name a couple who are in the book.
All of those, actually, that you mentioned, of course, the classic Christy Turlington, Naomi Campbell, Kate Moss. But you know, we span an entire era of history. So you know, we start very early on in what I like to call the golden age. You know, with models like Lisa Fonsegrieve's Pen. And you know, so Dorian Lee.
Goodness, you know, go way back,
Bettina Graziani. You know, so we go through the sort of all through the eras, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. You know, and we talk about each one of these women and the things that they might have done, representing ethnicity, diversity, inclusion.
Oh,
and then,
yeah,
of course, the business behind it. You know, models like Cindy Crawford and Elle Macpherson, who decided to sort of not necessarily work for somebody else, like him, or even models like Iman, who created her own makeup line, but actually create their own business and say, you know what, I'm going to do my own swimwear line and model my own clothes, and I'm going to create my own makeup line for black women, if it's Iman, for example, and change the business. And you know, these were the models who did that for the very first time, and it's their story and how they did it and why they did it.
Oh, wow. I have to get that book. I know you've got some fabulous photos in there, too. And, you know, you wrote another book, which this one really I'm going to have to buy because I need help here. It's called Nigel Barker's Beauty Equation, and it's How to Make Yourself a More Beautiful You. Do I have that right?
Yes.
At revealing a better and more beautiful you. So how do you make yourself a better and more beautiful you? There's a question.
Well, actually, the book is designed as almost like a workbook, and it's the idea behind it is it's using photography as a form of phototherapy for you to look at yourself as you sort of go through various sort of ideas and concepts about beauty, and you know, we talk about inner beauty attributes throughout the book, and we talk about everything from sense of humor to grace and charm and various different things that, you know, when you think about someone who you really love or someone you fall in love with or someone who, like, who you really care about, it's not necessarily their physicality that you love, it's their personality. And so, you know, a large part of the book is to sort of say that, you know, true beauty and why we find people sort of gorgeous or beautiful is it comes from within. And until you harness that, then you can't truly be beautiful. There might be physical aspects to you that people say, oh, well, she's obviously pretty because she's X this high, this tall, this slim, or has this color, this kind of, you know, her skin is clear or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, that doesn't make for someone, to be someone's muse. And
right,
one of the things that makes someone a sort of a supermodel oftentimes is that the industry and the world at large, you know, latches onto this person because they represent how we feel at that time, and they also represent how we want to feel. And so, and for whatever reason, whatever it is about them, whether it's Twiggy, for example, in the sort of 60s, who, you know, was only 5'5" and, you know, cut her hair really short,
right,
and had this sort of tomboy look. And today that seems like whatever, who cares really? But back then it was very unusual. It was, you know, we were coming right out of the 50s. Women were very prim and proper. They had their hourglass shaped bodies, and you know, the clothes were very specific. And that was because it was post-war, and we were, you know, we were finally out of from the 1940s. We were in this post-war world, but Twiggy was like, actually, I want to be myself. I want to, you know, and it was the very first sort of tomboy look. And women felt like it was a revolution. So, you know, there's lots of different stories in the book and things that we go into. And obviously, Beauty Equation is about telling those sort of certain stories from the inside out.
Right. You know, back in the 1800s, I was a model. And, you know, one of the things that I noticed is besides people, you know, these women being incredibly photogenic, what sold them oftentimes, surprisingly, is their personalities. I mean, I know a few auditions that I went on that I was completely not right for the part or role, and I just kind of talked my way into it. And I see that with these models that are so popular that you can tell that the photographer has fun with them. So, you know, it's not only the fact of their physical attributes, but it's their personalities, too, that kind of sells them in some of these big jobs and, you know, made it into your book.
Well, that's, I think, always the case. I mean, people ask all the time, you know, how did this person become a supermodel? or mm-hmm. how did this person become so successful? And they're right. like, they scratch their head. They're like, you know, because if you just look at them physically, they're not necessarily, you know, right. do it for you or whatever, you know, but the reality is it is that personality. It is that sort of chutzpah that person has, mm-hmm. or, you know, that sort of je ne sais quoi, you know, where, you know, it's the reason you fall in love. It's charisma,
exactly.
basically. It's
charisma.
It's true.
Right.
It's true charisma, and that can ooze off a page. But you know, it's the reality. It's the reason why a designer picks some model, some point, or a photographer, or an editor, and now, of course, the world at large through social media, mm-hmm. To become, you know, the faces that we want to see.
Yeah, you know, speaking of social media and digital platforms, how do you think the landscape of fashion photography has changed? And what advice would you give to aspiring photographers in today's digital age? And another question I have is, I want to ask you, what do you think about all the photoshopping that's on everybody's photos?
Yes, I mean, I'm not a fan of, you know, crazy filters that mm-hmm. that basically Photoshop an entire image at once and take away, you know, everyone's personality,
right.
you know, and sort of turn us all into Barbie dolls. And that's nothing against Barbie.
Yeah, exactly.
It is, you know, the fact of the matter is that I truly believe that our wrinkles actually are a large part of our story, regardless yeah. of whether we like them or not. You know, it's a part of growing older, and it's a part of who we are, and there's nothing wrong with growing older. And actually, we have to redefine what we consider to be beautiful. And, you know, in many cultures, age is considered something of, you know, that should be respected and mm-hmm. is actually, you know, considered extremely important, mm-hmm. if not beautiful. So, you know, and so it's really the way we look at it. But, you know, I'm not a fan of those types of filters. And mm-hmm. but at the same time, you know, I always say to people, you know, because some people are sort of super anti-retouching, and I'm like, mm-hmm. well, the reality is that there's a time and a place for retouching. And mm-hmm. you know, every one of us in the morning, or at least most of us, even no matter what culture you come from, do things like brush our hair, mm-hmm. put on makeup if you're, you know, if that's what you do, mm-hmm. You know, even get dressed in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And all those things are ways that we retouch ourselves. You know, we don't just get out of bed with our hair looking crazy and then walk straight to work and, you know, and whatever. You know, it's like that no, we say, no, we're going to actually fix that and brush that, and we're going to yeah. put some makeup on and what have you. And we're going to, you know, whatever that might be, you know, every newscaster, every actor you've seen in a movie,
oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
all those guys, that they've all got makeup on, and mm-hmm. you know, whether they, you know, no matter what sex they are, they're wearing makeup pretty much 99% of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, and I believe that, you know, with retouching, what I like to say is fair is, for example, if I'm photographing someone and they have sort of acne or something, mm-hmm. I sort of feel like, well, that maybe is not really a part of their everyday story. That's yeah. something that happened this week or the past mm-hmm. 2 weeks, and by the time this magazine comes out, that zit or whatever won't be there anymore.
Right.
So therefore, why should it be in this picture? But what I don't do is say change the structure of your bones or your jawline or actually straighten your nose or something like that. Where I'm
right.
like, well, you know, that is changing who that person is. And you know, I'm married to an identical twin. And yeah. despite the fact that they're identical, they are actually slightly different. And it only takes the smallest change to actually really radically change who the person is. So when you do retouch yourself, if you do change your physicality and your bone structure, you really change who you are.
Right. Oh, that's so well said. That is terrific. Well, I believe you've got twin girls too, don't you?
I don't actually. I'm just married to a twin, Chrissy.
Oh, I see. Okay. And, well, do you have children?
I do. I have a son and a daughter. My son is 18. His name is Jack, and my daughter is Jasmine, and she's 15.
What a beautiful name. Let me ask you: do you give Jasmine advice on, you know, dressing, fashion, maybe photo tips, or
I mean,
does
I
she
have,
not come
I,
to you?
No. I have done, and uh-huh. you know, we have a great relationship, and she's mostly. She'll come out in the morning and say, "What do you think of my fit?" That's actually what she calls it. "What do you think of my fit?" And she's very sporty, and so she likes to have this sort of very sporty look most of the time. And you know, she's a volleyball expert, and she's a sort of basketball girl, and you know, so she's, you know, it's all very baggy clothing and what have you. But you know, she's 6'1", And she's 15 years old, so she's got quite the frame, you know. And she and she's done a few. She's walked in New York Fashion Week four times now, and done the cover of various different magazines as a model. And so she's kind of got her feet in both worlds.
Wow, good for her. Well, I don't doubt that she would be involved in all that with you as a father, and I know your wife is gorgeous. Let me ask you, what are some fashion trends that you would like to see disappear?
You know, I'm never overly critical about fashion trends. You know, that's the
You're
whole
smart.
Thing. Well, yes. Also because they're trends. I mean, you know, they will go. They'll go by themselves, and something else will come along. And, you know, and funnily enough, you know, it's easy to be a hater, but I think it's the same. You know, if I look back historically, and the older one gets, I think the more mellow one becomes about all of these things. I probably was a lot more opinionated a few years ago, but I see things like, you know, flares and things like that that were considered to be like, you know, oh my goodness, we used to wear those crazy pants in the 70s or whatever, and now they're very fashionable again.
Oh, exactly. You know? Everything comes around again.
So it's, and it gets changed, it gets modified a little bit, and the fabric's different, and the textiles are updated, and, you know, a lot of the fabrics we're using these days are very technical. They are sweat-proof, wick-proof, waterproof. Right. You know, they stretch in 10 different ways. They, you know, so there's all kinds of new technology being, injected into fashion as well.
Right. Well, you know, one of the styles that I'd like to see never come back is those are capri pants. And I think they look spectacular on somebody like your daughter, who's 6'1". I've tried wearing them, and when I see myself in photos, I look like I'm a gnome or one of the seven dwarves. So it was the worst look or seen in my life. I mean, on me anyway. So that, I hope, never comes back.
More importantly is the fashion statement that we need to be making is talking about sustainability and environmentally friendly clothing, right? So
yes,
you know, that is really the next sort of frontier in fashion. And although it has been going on for some time, I'm a member of the board of, and I work with a company called Eco Fashion, where I help them with as a creative director at Eco Fashion. And the companies, you know, their name Eco Fashion, we've all heard, but the woman Marcy Zeroff actually coined the term many years ago and invented the term. And essentially, it's, you know, it's about creating fashion that is really from seed to store. You know, they can tell the whole story of you know, how it was planted, where the seed came from, who worked on it, the factories the garment was made in, you know, and all aspects. You can trace all elements of it, so that you know the clothes that you've got, you have on you, you've just bought and you put on your back, are actually, you know, they come from a great place and are sustainable and environmentally friendly.
Wow, that is incredible. That was what I was going to ask you, what you were working on now, but that is super interesting and something that's very necessary. Is it already popular? Is it getting more popular? Are people paying attention to that?
It's getting very popular, and we have some big news coming out soon. I can't say exactly what it is, but
you can.
I wish I could, but I can't. But we are about to, you know, launch a very special collection, and we have some great people coming on board with the business. But essentially, you know, one of the big things here is that the world itself cannot exist for much longer if we, you know, deplete all its natural resources and take advantage of everything that's going on to the planet. You know, the fashion industry is a large driver in a lot of the issues that we have with global warming and the environment in general, you know, because of the amount of clothes that we wear and fast fashion. And so we have to start being smart about what we wear, how we wear it, and where it comes from and how it's made. You know, and we're talking about all aspects from, you know, the actual dyes that are used to create these clothing, and to the actual shipping of the clothing all around the world, to the packaging it's produced in, you know, all the waste material when you make something. So there's just multiple different aspects to how we have to tighten up our business model in fashion, because we've been highly responsible for much of the problems that we're looking at today.
That's so true. I love the passion in your voice about it. That's hopeful. No, I know that most people probably know you as a judge and photographer on America's Next Top Model. Please tell me some interesting stories about those many years that you were involved with this show and some of your favorite models that came on.
Well, I mean, first of all, that's a very big question right there.
Well, you can pick it apart if you want. Just answer what you could.
I'm not sure that's even a question. That's like, tell me about your life.
Tell me everything. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
But what did you like
the most about it?
I liked all aspects of it. I mean, it was a really fun show to work on. I was on the show for 18 seasons. 17 of those, I was the full judge and photographer for season 2 through 18. Wow. And, you know, we got to travel all around the world. My wife was my makeup artist, so she came with me.
That's handy.
So the two of us got to travel the world together. And on top of that, you know, we had two children during the process. So that they would travel with us as well. So we were like this traveling family on America's Next Top Model all over the world. So we had the most extraordinary fun time, spending half the year in LA, half the year in New York, and then traveling for several months of the year to really exotic locations, you know, like South Africa and Japan and Paris and Milan and Rome and London and, you know, you name it, we Thailand. We went all over the world and New Zealand, and every season somewhere special, and really got to see some unique things. And, you know, for example, amazing story. We were in China, in Beijing, and we wanted to do our final runway show. And we basically booked the Forbidden City, which had never actually been shot by an American TV crew ever before. And we managed to book it. And I remember sitting there in the Emperor's throne, looking down at this incredible kind of courtyard that, you know, was full of Chinese soldiers that we had dressed in historically accurate clothing from sort of several hundred years ago, standing there, and our models got to walk through them. And I remember thinking sort of immediately, like, this is so weird that we're shooting America's Next Top Model here. Like, you know, like emperors who sat here would never have known that an American TV reality show would be doing a fashion show right where an emperor sat. And I literally had like the hair on the back of my neck stand up on end as I watched and felt like, what's going on right now? We're actually doing this. So we really did some extraordinary things and some amazing things, and, you know, and we redefined what it meant to sort of create fashion television.
Oh my God, what a memory that is. Well, that is really something. That is thrilling. So looking back on this amazing journey of yours so far, what advice would you give to your younger self, knowing what you know now?
You know, I think the number one thing I tell all young people who, you know, sort of ask me for advice is that you have to be compassionate with yourself, that you have to be, you have to give yourself a break. And you also have to not be so judgmental, and be careful not to pigeonhole yourself. Other people will do that for you. They'll tell you that you can do this and you can't do that, or you should be doing this, or, you know, you're educated this way, so therefore you should be doing that, or, you know, you used to be a model, so why should you be a photographer? You used to be a photographer, so how can you be an author? You know, you're an author. How are you designing furniture? You know, if you're designing furniture, how could you be a creative director? My point is that I have tried to lead my life giving myself the opportunity, and if I saw something I wanted to do, even if it was different from what I was doing now, that was fine if I wanted to give it a try. And you could, if you do that, I believe, then you can try and live your life without regrets. And what you don't want, I think, is to sort of find yourself at a point where you regret your life you've led because you haven't given yourself the opportunity to do certain things that, because you held yourself back.
Oh God, that is the best advice I've heard. Listen, Nigel, thank you for that. So now I want to talk a little bit about your trip visit to Chicago. You're going to be in town on April 25th to host Blossom, which is Wing's first fashion show fundraiser. And as I mentioned, it's one of the largest agencies that supports survivors of domestic violence. What are your thoughts on the show and on Chicago in general? Do you enjoy coming here?
Oh, I love Chicago. I mean, that's the reason why I'm there so often. I mean, I'm in Chicago once or twice a month. And it's sort of a home away from home. I have a furniture line called the NB Collection that I launched with a company called Art Van many years ago.
Oh, Art Van. I was there at the opening when they introduced you.
Right. So
I remember that. Yes.
So Cindy Crawford introduced my furniture line in Chicago, and it's made out of Chicago. So I've spent many a day, a week in Chicago, working on my furniture collection and launching it there, and of course working at 21C and helping them with their events. And I love the fashion industry there. I love how hardworking people are in Chicago, and they're sort of It's like it has a lot of what New York has, but in many ways it's like a small town at the same time. It's like it has almost like this great ability to have a very tight-knit community where everyone knows each other. People are very supportive, and they're very hardworking, and it's really nitty-gritty too, which I really appreciate. I like that about Chicago and always have. And you know, I'm really excited for this. This event's going to be sensational. The fashion show is amazing. Violence in the home is something which I grew up with, unfortunately, and it's one of the reasons why I was drawn to this particular organization, Blossom and Wings, rather. And I felt that, you know, if I can help shine a light and help other survivors, know that there is a world awaiting them if they again have compassion for themselves and allow themselves to recover and to sort of, you know, live their best life, it is possible.
Oh, that's, I agree with you 100%. And you're going to oversee a show by Elda De La Rosa, which is a much loved local designer, and we'll have live entertainment by a jazz singer, Elaine Dame. So and Nigel's going to be there. I'm lucky enough to be the honoree, so it's going to be a magnificent evening.
I got a question that's burning a hole in my brain on this one. So Nigel, had your mom not put you on the televised fashion show, you were headed, it seems to be, maybe for a career in medicine. I mean, you did the biology, the chemistry, the physics. So are there any parallels to what got you interested in the medicine field back in the day that you can apply to fashion? Is there anything that kind of juxtaposition with that?
Not exactly. It's definitely a very, very different world. You know, I was one of those students that was pretty average at everything, so I was able to kind of pick what I wanted to do, but I actually didn't pick what I wanted to do. My parents picked it for me, which was medicine. So I studied biology, chemistry, physics, and maths for my A levels, which is how you specialize in the UK very early on when you're 16. And so I was on a route to sort of studying medicine, and it was, you know, really. That track changed when my mother entered me into a modeling competition when I was sort of 17, 18 years old. And I got an opportunity to try some modeling, which I did for what was going to be just a gap year between going to medical school and my high school. But it led to 2 years, which led to 3, 4, 5, 6, and I never went back to school.
I was going to say, you're still working on the gap.
Exactly. Mind the gap, as they say in the UK.
There you go.
Well, it's a joy to talk to you. You've had an extraordinary life. Your advice is nonpareil, and I'm so grateful. I can't wait to see you again, and thanks again for doing this event for Wings.
No, it's my pleasure. I'm looking forward to seeing you too. And yes, please, everybody, go to wings.com. Or is it wings.org?
Wingsprogram.com. I'm sorry. Wingsprogram.com.
Fantastic. Yeah. And you get a ticket. They're going quickly. It's going to be a fantastic event.
And it will be. It's going to sell out for sure.
Fantastic. Thanks.
Thank you.
He's a pretty incredible guy.
He is an absolutely amazing guy. And, you know, he's got so many abilities. I mean, he's a photographer, judge on America's Next Top Model. He's a writer, an author, a model, an actor. He just does it all. And on top of all that, he is one of the nicest men I have ever met.
You know, I would imagine, because I can only imagine spending time in your world, that it would be filled with people who maybe aren't always so nice, or they're maybe more egocentric.
You know, this is why he stands out so much, because I would hate to say it, but most of the people are very egocentric, especially somebody that's achieved as much as he has. And, the fact that he's going to be here in Chicago, emceeing this event, it means the world to not only me, but certainly to this nonprofit, Wings. And, again, if anybody wants to buy tickets, I encourage them to go to wingsprogram.com. It's going to be March 7th at Park West. Nope, that's the wrong event. I'm wrong. Okay. Well, you know what? Just go to the website and you can find out when
I think it's in April.
Oh, yeah, April 25th. Thank there you, John. You got me back on the right track. Thank you. I got a little distracted for a second.
Well, You know what I'm excited about is that we both have a good friend coming on, because her voice opens and closes this show.
You betcha. And I'm telling you, she gives me so much credibility, I think, because I feel very important when I hear her introduction. I mean, Jennifer Weigel, yeah, I mean, I know she's been a long, long time fabulous friend of yours, but you know, and I've come to the party a little late, but anybody that's ever met this woman, they feel a complete, you know, like she's one of the nicest people around on the planet. I mean, and she does so much. She's an Emmy award-winning broadcast journalist. She's an empath. She's a radio and TV personality. She's a motivational speaker. She's a performer. I mean, she really, truly does it all. And she's got some great news that she's going to share with us about a big event coming up. So let's bring her on.
Oh my goodness, aren't you sick of my voice by now?
Absolutely never. Listen, I listen to it in my sleep. I love it so much.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me. It's the first time I've ever been introduced as an empath, and I guess the cat's out of the bag, right?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I follow you on social media, and one of your social media posts, you say that that's what you are. And
well, yeah, there's lots of us out there, right? We're just sort of sensitive to things, and people, we're told our whole lives, you're too sensitive. Oh, you take things too seriously. And it's like, no, we just have a little bit of a different wiring system, right? We take things to heart. And that makes, I think, for a very good journalist. I'm sure you are too in your own right as well. Mm-hmm. And I know John is, he just wouldn't say it out loud, but he is too.
No, I think so too. And you know, I think that's a great ability, because you have such a unique talent in reading people. And I think, you know, that if nothing else is what really makes you get ahead in things, because you can, before they even open their mouths, you pretty much got something figured out that most people probably wouldn't.
Well, it's so funny you say that, because I was literally trying to explain it to somebody that, you know how a dog can feel when a storm is coming and they start pacing like 2 hours before the storm hits and you're like, gosh, what's wrong with the dog? That was like me as a kid when my parents were going to have a fight. I could feel it a couple hours before it was going to happen, and it was very strange. And so my mom took me to the doctor. I had this chronic stomach ache all the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so they took me to the doctor, and the pediatrician pulled my mom outside. I'll never forget it, because I could hear it through the door. And he said, she's just making it up for attention.
No.
Yeah, he went on to practice for 30 years, by the way.
Oh, God.
So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. And I think a lot of people out there who are sensitive, there's a documentary out now called Highly Sensitive People, and that's really what they're talking about. The empath wiring, doctors are talking about it and validating it all over the world now. And Dr. Judith Orloff is one of the champions. I know, John, you've talked with Dr. Orloff, because she's a big buddy of Oprah's. But yeah, to just be told, yeah, you're too sensitive. Just shake it off, honey. That's what I was told for all those years. It's like, no, now it's validated. But you also don't want to make it debilitating. You want to have it be empowering.
Right. Do you know, do you think that ability comes from kids that grew up in like rather difficult home circumstances?
I do think trauma has something to do with it. I know I've interviewed a lot of people that have this kind of wiring, and it's from something traumatic, either a horrible childhood where they were, you know, neglected or abused, or they had a near-death experience, or even a car accident could cause oversensitive wiring. And now you look at all these sporting events, right? You see, and they do these cutaways to kids that are wearing these noise-canceling headphones. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening. They're not weird. A lot of kids who are autistic or on the spectrum, they label this as this disorder. They're just highly sensitive. Mm-hmm, they just, their spidey senses are on overdrive. And that's really what it is. I remember taking my son to Curious George, the live show in Rosemont. And he was like, get me out of here. He loved Curious George, but there was just too much going on for his sensitivities. And I think now parents are starting to understand that this is a thing. It's not a bad thing. It just is.
Yeah. Wow. That's really well put. My stepfather was a horrible alcoholic drunk. And so, yeah, that really, I think, you know, because like you said, you would sense your parents having an argument hours before. Exactly the same thing with my situation. I could pretend when he was on his way home. So a little bit like a dog waiting at the door for its owner.
Right.
But but anyway, I mean, you have a lot of things coming up. So let's get to your exciting performance, your one-woman show. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm Spiritual Dammit is the name of the show, and it's based off of my book name.
Weigel, you got to do it like you usually do it. I'm Spiritual Dammit.
Damn it.
Damn it.
Damn it. Yeah, it's been a journey of, you know, you can say you're spiritual and you can be spiritual and you can still say, damn it, and the divine will still like you. And you can still go to happy hour, and that's cool too. And so I'm really tired of all the judgment that comes with this umbrella of something bigger and better. And I, you know, God and the angels were written about and talked about long before people were killing over their religion. And I just kind of want to get people back to that. But for a long time, I did this show back when my first book, Stay Tuned, came out. And I wrote Stay Tuned after my dad, Tim Weigel, died. And I was sort of on this quest because I didn't believe in any of this crap. I didn't think any of it was real, really. I mean, I didn't have a word, empath, any of that. It was just, you're a journalist, do your job. You have a gut check. That's about it. But then my dad dies and I realize there are all these people that claim to have these skills. They were hanging a shingle. And so I thought I was going to go do an expose about how they were all full of it. And then after, you know, 200 interviews, I realized that some people are just wired differently and maybe there's something going on here that I can't see or explain or touch. And so therefore, I started compiling the data and the stories and the first show came out. And then I went on my way and it was fun and we had a good time. And then I was a columnist for the Tribune and I got busy and then wrote for the Sun-Times and had a TV show with food and wine. And I just got distracted from the show. Uh-huh. And then it was a pandemic that hit. As we all know, we got holed up. And after that, a friend of mine said, Jen, have you ever thought about bringing back your one-woman show? And John has always been saying that. He's like, sister, get on stage.
That's it.
So I resurrected some of what was done before and a lot of new material. I would say mostly new material since. And the hits just keep coming, as we like to say. They've just... So, yeah. Two nights on March 7th and 8th in Glenview at the Oil Lamp Theater. We're going to be bringing I'm Spiritual, damn it, to the stage.
Well, where can people get tickets?
Just go to oillamptheater.org. It's an O-R-G. Or, you know, sometimes you can find it on my website at jenweigel.com. But the Oil Lamp Theater is the best place, and it's right there on the homepage. Just scroll down and look for I'm Spiritual, damn it.
Excellent. And it's T-H-E-A-T-R-E. So, you know, if you can't find it otherwise. Well, that sounds like it's going to be so much fun for you. I mean, do you enjoy being on stage or does it make you nervous or how do you, I mean, you're up there alone, obviously. It does say one woman. So how does that?
Very good. Very good.
That is true. Well, you know what? Actually, it's funny. I was a theater trained, right? So journalism minor, theater major down at University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. And one of my classmates was the famous Nick Offerman. You know, good old Nick and I were there. And actually, my director of this show, Joe Faust, was Nick's best buddy. The three of us were theater majors down at U of I together. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trained for this. It's just not something I've done a lot of, especially lately. So then when you've got it sort of in there, and I'm used to doing talks in front of thousands of people, as are you, Candace, as is John. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned Wings. I emceed that event a couple of times. I love that event and their organization. Oh. It's wonderful, wonderful group of people. So yeah, I'm very comfortable with that. It's just... I just haven't done it in a while. So it is a little nerve-wracking to bring all these stories together and hope that you can get them out of your mouth and make sense in some sort of coherent way. But I am very honest when things do go bump, if a cue doesn't hit or whatever, it's live theater. That's why I love it so much, because it's so authentic. It's happening right then and there. So what you see is what you get.
Yeah, you know, I think live theater and live TV and everything like that is so much more interesting than tape things. Yeah. I mean, I just love it. I like everything. I like all the bumps and the, you know, I think it makes it more interesting, quite frankly. So,
yeah. And that's why I love watching even some of the old, you know, Johnny Carson shows, because they're just laughing. They have these moments. They didn't edit it to bits. You know, they really had genuine moments with each other. Yeah, exactly. It rarely happens anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, the Jackie Gleason show, he never, ever rehearsed, so everything out of his mouth was the first time anybody had ever heard it. Yeah. So you also, I mean, you do so much, Jennifer. You're involved in not only these kinds of things, it's entertainment, but also you're involved in the nonprofit world.
I am, as I know it's dear to your heart as well. Yeah. Yes, I spent a lot of time on different boards for different nonprofits, and I thought, wait a minute, how about telling stories and doing it in a way, because I don't know about you, Candace, but I saw a lot of stuff go on where I was like, that's not exactly the best way to handle things or the best way to do things. And as a person a journalist of integrity, I thought, well, what if I continued to help people tell stories and then we could put it under the umbrella of the Storytelling Education Project? And so STEP is what it's called, Storytelling Education Project. You can call look at storytellingeducation.org. And it is a wonderful place where we do live events. We interview authors, different authors, and they are actually producing this one-woman show. So we help people bring their stories so that they can heal through connecting in storytelling. Whether you're just telling one person, you know, I think everybody needs a witness to be validated for healing. And a lot of times that can happen with just even a fireside chat can be so healing. So it's all about healing and connecting through storytelling.
Oh, I love that. That sounds fabulous. Well, are you working on any new books?
Yes.
On top of all the other work you're doing.
Yes, I am. I am a ghostwriter for people who can't write, but I am currently writing my fifth book as we speak. And so hopefully by the fall, we can chat about that. I'm still spiritual, damn it, is what I think I'm going to call it.
Oh, I love that. That's great. Well, that title just slays me every time I hear it. So that is really something so adorable, just like you. And, you know, if anybody wants to come to this to hear you, let's give that information again. Oil Lamp Theater, March 7th and 8th, and oillamptheater.org. It's a nonprofit, which I think is fabulous. And you're just so talented, Jennifer. My God, you know, I have known you for so long, and I've admired you from afar, mostly until lately. And I mean, you've done just everything. I mean, you're on WCIU, you're hosting shows, you're hosting television, you're hosting radio. I mean, I feel very honored to know you.
Oh, right back at you. I love always seeing what's percolating for you and the people that you're talking to. We have to keep supporting each other. And that's the thing. There's so many women that try to cut down other women. And I've never, ever thought that about you. And I respect you so much because you are propping other women up. So here's to you and all the people that you cheer on. Truly, it's very unique in this business. And I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled to be part of your wheelhouse, honestly. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thanks for coming on. John, do you have any questions for your lifelong friend?
No, she's answered them all 10 times over. The interesting thing is that when we have these conversations on the air, I always learn something new about her, and I've known her 20 years. And so the thing that I find interesting, even though I've done a lot of presentations in front of groups and audiences and stuff internationally, a couple of TED Talks, all that stuff, I couldn't do what she does on stage. I'm not that effing funny. She's goddamn funny.
She is funny. She's super funny.
And the first time we went and saw her live, I'm like, I was on the floor. And when you know somebody and they're that funny and you didn't realize they're that funny, that's a pretty cool thing. So I encourage everybody listening to get a chance to run out to the Oil Lamp Theater, March 7th and 8th. Go both nights. Why not?
Glenview.
And Glenview.
Supporting local theater is so important. We don't do it enough. And I'm thrilled to just keep banging the drum, as they say.
Well, you're doing it loudly and clearly, Jennifer. Thank goodness for you. Well, thanks for coming on with us again.
Good luck with your
mini projects.
You got it. Keep me posted on all of yours as well, and both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
She's just the best.
She is absolutely the best. And, you know, I owe it meeting her to you. Because when I first met you, you talked about her so much, and I kind of, started noticing her and following her, and then pretty soon, here she is. I'm so lucky to have her do the intro and the exit on this show. My God. But then once you get to know her, like when we talk to her and I've seen her at, events, I mean, she's truly the real deal. I mean, there's not a mean bone in that woman's body. I mean, she is so filled with love and light that it shines so brightly for all to see. And so it's really a privilege to talk to her and have her come back on again.
One of the things that I admire most about her is her work ethic. A lot of times in the media, which is a tough business.
Yeah.
In many ways, it's a crapshoot, One day you're up, one day you're down, one day you're here, one day you're gone. But her work ethic inspires me to keep working. She comes up with this stuff constantly. Part of it, I think, is survival. When you have to work and to do the things, you don't have big contracts and you don't have, long-term commitments from radio stations or newspapers, or whatever.
Right.
You got to
right.
figure shit out. That's just the way it is. And she always does. So I'm all about that to help her, prop up and where can we work, how do we help each other?
Right.
And the other thing is that the conversations that she and I have off the air, because we did a year together, John and Jen on the air in Washington, D.C. It was fantastic. Yeah. We had a lot of fun. There's just a natural chemistry there. but there's a respect factor professionally we both have for each other, which, as you just mentioned about the world of fashion, isn't always intact.
Right.
You know, and the same goes for the media.
Why don't you have a John and Jen show? I mean, that you should have that.
That's the great question of the ages, right? So when I was on WGN 10 years ago, you know, we pitched it, and I said, listen, it doesn't get any better than this. You know, it's John and Jen on WGN.
Yeah.
It flows, and we're
oh my God,
in some
yeah.
ways kind of opposite, but we're trying to get to the same place. And that's always a good chemistry for radio. And one of the guys that was there thought it was great. The next day, he was fired. So, hey.
Oh, yeah. Oh no. Not, I hope not for thinking that you.
No, had nothing to do. No. Nothing to do with us. But that's how these things work, you know. And sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. So we have dabbled in the idea of doing our own podcast together, very Chicago centric type thing.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll see. She's busy. Yeah. I'm busy. We'll see.
Well, I just think you guys are such a great team. So you know, anyway, you got my backing.
Thanks.
No money, but you got my back.
That and a bottle
and
of booze,
yeah,
and I'm good.
A bottle of booze will really help.
All right.
Well, you know, I want to tell you about some, you know, I went to Palm Beach, Chuck and I, and Penny lately. So we had a nice little trip down to Palm Beach. Weather was spectacular. Of course, the weather was better here than when we were gone, but that's typical. But I want to tell you about this guy that we met down there at this beautiful, there was a party at this fabulous mansion on Middle Road. My girlfriend, it's her home. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And the guy's name is Raymond Kelly. And I don't know if you know that name or know who he is, but he was the longest serving commissioner in the history of the New York Police Department.
Oh, I've heard about this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, he's on Fox News a lot. He's a commentator and analyst for a lot of the crime and stuff. And 45 years he was in the NYPD in 25 different commands. And after his handling of the World Trade Center, Bloomberg wanted him to be the FBI director, and he turned that job down. He fought in the Vietnam War. He was a Marine colonel. He was endorsed by Senator Chuck Schumer to become Secretary of Homeland Security. I mean, the guy is a complete badass.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's 82 years old, and he was swarmed by these young women at this party. swarmed.
You know, badass never goes away.
No, it never goes away. And it's always intriguing. And I'm telling you, he had him, hanging on his every word, but he was a really cute guy. And it was really a thrill to meet him, somebody with that kind of a background. It was really something. And then I went to that Tickle Pink event, you know, that supports breast cancer survivors and previvors. And they had, it was a very cute event. It was at Rockwell on the River. They had firemen selling raffle tickets, you know, these little, I mean, it was just adorable. But one of the things that was so interesting, that one of the raffle items were tickets to Taylor Swift's Eras Tour. And two tickets were valued at $5,000.
Holy cow.
And where are these young kids getting the money to go to the show?
They're getting it from their mom and dad.
Well, that's true, too. But listen, it was a fabulous, fabulous event. And
Do you remember the first concert you ever went to? Live?
Yeah, I think it was the Moody Blues.
Oh, that would make sense, yeah.
Yeah, and I hated it.
Really?
First of all, here's the thing. I don't like going to live concerts. What happened, my girlfriend and I, when I was in high school, we went to a concert, and I sadly can't remember which one it was, but we stood right near the speakers.
Yeah.
And, you know, you always have your ears ringing afterwards because it's so loud. Well, she completely lost hearing in one of her ears that never came back.
No kidding.
From that one night. And that's, you know, that's really kind of turned me off from going to loud concerts.
I imagine so.
Yeah, but, you know, I like to watch them on television.
A little quieter, a little safer.
Yeah, close as I want to get.
Parking's easier.
Do you have a favorite? I mean, you must have gone to every
one. Oh, I've gone to a lot of concerts, but my very first one is, not only it's my favorite still, but it's unforgettable to me. I was a freshman in high school in 1973, and a friend of mine's dad owned a funeral home. And so we wanted to go see Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Oh, sure.
At the Chicago Theater. Chicago Stadium. The old Chicago Stadium where the Blackhawks used to play.
Yeah.
And so we got his dad to drive us there in the hearse. and he pulled right up in front of the Chicago Stadium. And we rolled out, you know, and be like, what's going on here with this hearse here? And it was, you know, yeah, it was, we were all just a bunch of idiots. But it was a whole lot of fun. And to this day, you know, it just remains in my mind. And that's why I think I like music so much, because it's like a time machine for us. You know?
Yeah, it is. And as soon as you hear a song, you remember exactly where and when you were when you heard it. So
yeah.
I agree with that. Tomorrow morning, not to change subjects, but tomorrow morning, people from Julian's Auction House, which is in Beverly Hills, will be here to tape me for an upcoming auction they're having about Hugh Hefner and Marilyn Monroe. It's called what? The Icons Auction. And so they're going to do a featurette about me to send to all their prospective bidders and, you know, the people that subscribe and blah, 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 because it's Playboy related. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I get to show off my costume again. And
you're going
to
wear it? You gonna put the ears on, kid?
Yeah, I can't get my arm through the thing. That's so there you go. No to the wearing, but, yeah. But it's cool. I can't wait. And, you know, listen to this. The auction's got some really cool stuff. They've got Marilyn Monroe's gown from the 7-Year Itch, estimated at $100,000 to $200,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Hef smoking jackets are estimated at $2,000 to $3,000. But this is one of my favorites. They've got a custom lipstick shade, it's like a coral, that was used by Marilyn Monroe, and it's estimated at $7,000 to $8,000.
What?
Yes.
How do you even begin to estimate a lipstick?
Well, it's got a custom label, you know, MM, Custom Peach, or whatever, but still, oh my God.
So, let me guess, $5,000 for Taylor Swift tickets, $8,000 for the lipstick. Eh.
Yeah, I'm telling you, people are nuts. But, you know, listen, I hope they do well with it because, you know, obviously my video will be on it. So
yeah, so that goes out to the perspective.
To everybody that's, you know, a part of that world. Yeah, so we'll see. I'm trying to remember all the things about Playboy and Hef. I mean, the older I get, the more I forget. But anyway, we'll see. It'll be fun. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's cool.
And then also Saturday is, you know, today is Chef Art Smith's birthday.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and he's going to have, tomorrow he's going to have an event at that new pickleball tournament?
Yes.
And it's, he's so cute. I'm trying to find my notes. I can't find it. Wait a minute. All right, it's,
not like live radio.
I have to tell you this because it's really interesting, but anyway he's going to have this pickleball tournament. It's going to Best Buddies is the organization it's going to support, because he sold tickets to it, but it's the Argentina chapter, because one of the coaches for this pickleball thing is Argentinian, and one of the Shrivers will be there because he founded it. So it'll be lots of celebrities there. And I will not be playing pickleball, but it should be fun to see how that all works out. So, yeah, that's tomorrow somewhere.
Somewhere in Chicago.
Somewhere in Chicago.
There's a pickleball thing from Argentina.
Yeah, for Art Smith. So that's it. So that's what I've got on that. listen, you know, I think I've told you this before, but I am participating in a spelling bee for Tutoring Chicago. Have you ever heard of this nonprofit, Tutoring Chicago?
I have not.
Well, you know, I hadn't either until they sent me this information. And they're really such a great organization. They provide free one-on-one tutoring for kids, I think up to 9th grade. And this is going to be on Thursday, March 7th at Park West. And so listen to the people that are involved. This is a little intimidating. Sherman Dilla Thomas, who's a writer, he's in the spelling bee. Dion Miller, you know, ABC7 meteorologist, or sportscaster. Dan Rohn, who, you know, former WGN sportscaster.
Dan's coming out of retirement to go to the spelling bee. Nice.
Yeah. You know, he's a judge. Did you know that?
In real life?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I don't know
where,
but it's in his bio. But anyway, and the Q brothers. I don't know if you know the Q brothers, but they're very entertaining. And all these people are uber smart. So I'm a little bit nervous, but, you know, I'm doing it for charity and it'll be fun.
That's right.
I just hope I don't get kicked out in the first round. That would just kill me. I got to keep my fingers crossed.
Just spell Argentina and you'll be all right.
Oh, listen, do you know, here, I'm going to give you a quiz.
Great.
You know, I Googled, you know, since I'm going to do this, I had to Google about commonly misspelled words.
And, oh, yeah.
So the number one misspelled word in the United States is coolie. Like I was treated coolie by those people or whatever. Do you know how to spell that?
Well, it's different than Cooley High, which was a great movie. So Cooley, like I was treated Cooley.
Yeah.
C-O-O-L-L-Y?
Exactly. Right. Thank you, Chief.
Now, Cooley High is C-O-O-L-E-Y.
Well, don't get me confused.
And the Cooley
now,
that
John.
Pulls you in a little rickshaw is C-O-O-L-Y.
Okay. Do not get me confused. All right. Here's the here's the third most misspelled word. Sergeant.
Sergeant?
Yeah. Like a sergeant at arms. Do you know how to spell that?
S-A-R-G-E.
No, see, that's what I did.
That's Sarge.
Listen to this. It's S-E-R-G-E-A-N-T. Now, who would know that?
And I was in the military, but we didn't have sergeants. We had chiefs, so that was a whole lot easier.
Chief, oh, yeah.
Not well, chief.
Yeah, but there is a really unusual list of misspelled words. Like,
so are they going to really like put the coals to you guys? Or they give you easy
you
stuff
know,
to
I
raise
don't, money? I'll bet you they're going to put the coals to us.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to want to knock everybody out as fast as possible, get the hell out of there so they can go home. So I'm probably
going
to...
That's the spirit.
No, it's a great cause. It'll be fun, I think. I don't know. I'm a little nervous, and I don't get nervous, but this is making me a little nervous. But anyway, people can come up for, you know, buy tickets. It's very cheap, the tickets. I can't remember how much you
are. You're on spot today, sister.
It's Tutoring Chicago.
It's over here somewhere in Chicago. The tickets are something over here. Look for Art Smith at Pickleball.
No, I know the website for this. It's tutoringchicago.org. And all the information and ticket information is there. So there, John. Hope you're happy now.
I am.
All right. Well, listen, you know, also, I know that you went out of town on a trip. And
yes,
you went to New Buffalo.
I did.
And you went to some really interesting spots. Why don't you tell us about that?
So there's a couple places over in Three Oaks, which is near New Buffalo. New Buffalo is like 60 miles from Chicago. It's a great getaway. A lot of people go there. I believe that one of the trains runs right from Chicago downtown to New Buffalo. You can take it. And there's a place called Grainer Farm. And it is everything that you eat there has been grown there. And so when we went about, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, I guess it's been already, it was for a fondue event. And, you know, I can be a fondue guy. I could pretty much eat anything if it's dipped in cheese, right? Who cares?
Yeah, hell yes.
So this was quite an event, and it was full. You know, it was sold out, and it was on a cold February night, a few weeks ago. And what a treat it was to go there and to have this, I mean, such a rustic, down-to-earth meal served by people. And, you know, everything was you know, raised right there. If not, it was, you know, raised earlier near and stored. So much, the pickles were so good. The next day we went back and I bought pickles to bring to Chicago. They were that good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, Grainer my God. Farms, I love experiences out like that. That's awesome. Grainor Farms. Is that
Grainer
right?
Grainor Farms. That's correct.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, you went somewhere else, though.
Did I?
Yeah.
You mean when I got whiskey?
Well, was we got beer.
Well,
remember?
So whiskey's in between those two. One of our favorite stops, and we were probably there the first time about 5-6 years ago, was the Beer Church.
Yes.
And the Beer Church is on the main drive as you run right into town, and it's a real church. And we were there when they just opened, like I mentioned, 5-6 years ago, and it was kind of just getting underway, and there was, you know, nowhere to sit and everything. We went back, and my ears were blown back because it was just incredible. The food was fantastic. A 400 kind of beer for a guy like me, that's heaven. So it was like we just sat there. I could not believe how it had changed and how it was supported by the community. So you gotta, if you go to New Buffalo, you go to Grainer Farms if you can get in the door, but you can go to Beer Church and just walk right in and you will not be disappointed.
Oh my God, I love it. And you know, it's amazing how those short trips can be so refreshing. I mean, it's just, it resets everything. And you're in a beautiful area. That's one of our favorite spots up there. I mean, God, good for you.
Yep.
Well, listen, we've had a fun time and we've done a lot. And it was so nice to have Nigel on and Jennifer. I mean, two of the sweetest people and,
people.
You know, doing so much in the world that is so good and so helpful. So this podcast is really making me happy, John.
Well, I'm glad. You know, I hear from people on occasion about, you know, they listen how far this has come because, you know, this is not your usual stock and trade. It's mine. You're a writer. You're in the newspaper business. You've done all these, you know, all that print stuff.
Yeah.
But I got to say, you've adapted to this very well. And I knew if I pushed you hard enough, it's going to come out. So
well,
that's how
I do. Listen, you have taught me so much. I mean, you don't let me slack off with my intros or exits. And I mean, you've taught me so much, and I'm really appreciative of it. And I love the fact that we started out, and I was a nervous wreck, and I had 4,000 notes. Actually, I still have 4,000 notes, but so nothing's changed there. But I do. I feel comfortable, and I particularly love the fact that, you know, we can promote such good things.
Correct.
And you know, and I hope people enjoy it as much as I enjoy doing it with you. So anyway, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed the show, and I hope you have a great weekend, too.
Thanks for listening to the Candid Candace podcast. For more of what's going on in Chicago, go to CandidCandace.com.